Formosa Files is sponsored by the Frank C. Chen Cultural Foundation. Frank Chen, Chen Qichuan, served as the mayor of Kaohsiung City from 1960 to 1968 and founded the Kaohsiung Medical College.
Formosa Files.
As we get near the end of season two of Formosa Files, and we're not 100% sure, but it seems very likely that we're going to get a season three, so I'm pretty excited about that. It's a good time, I think, to reflect on where we are and what lies ahead, and to answer some questions. We've got some listener questions, and also to give listeners a chance to catch up on episodes. So, John, what are your favorites? Or do you have any like recommendations from our back catalog?
In terms of recommendations, it's a matter of personal interest. If you like movies, then the Ang Lee episode, that's season 2, episode 16, Ang Lee in the Spotlight, that should appeal. Likewise, baseball fans will enjoy episode 12. I forget the name. What's that?
Taiwan Falls in and Out of Love with Baseball.
Ah, okay. And for me, my favorites are those that are lesser known, like the World War II story of the American submarine, the USS Tang. And much further back in time, the 17th century, the Kingdom of Dongning.
I think the title of that episode was The Brief and Often Forgotten Kingdom of Dongning. And it featured the story of the Ming loyalist who kicked out the Dutch and held off China's new rulers, the Qing, for roughly 2 decades. It's a virtually unknown period of time, but it has some great stories.
Especially the invasion plan for the Spanish Philippines.
Absolutely, yeah. The invasion plan for the Spanish Philippines. And for listeners who haven't heard that episode, that invasion plan is not referring to the Spanish in the Philippines wanting to invade Taiwan. That would make a little bit of sense. But it's the other way around. Kashinga's son wants to conquer Manila. It's a great counterfactual, you know, a fascinating what if, and just a lot of fun.
Not just fun, but instructive on how history works on the ground with multiple possibilities, multiple possible futures. And it's part of our approach to Formosa Files. You know, with history, there's a tendency to think the way things worked out was kind of inevitable. You have a series of connected dots, a line extending backward, and things are not a given. They're not linear. And if we put ourselves in the time and place, we see multiple possible futures, different groups advocating different things. You've got individuals with different ideas, and you've got some tough choices, the problems, the challenges, you know, tough choices, often life and death choices. It makes for a very easy storytelling.
Right. So big choices like whether the Americans should invade Taiwan during World War II, or way back in the 1670s, whether Taiwan should invade the Philippines.
Yeah.
And then we have personal choices. You're a Chinese prisoner in a Korean POW camp. Do you choose to be repatriated to the PRC or the ROC? Putting ourselves in the position of the people in our stories not only shows us how messy history is, as you were saying earlier, but it encourages empathy. You know, we're not condoning the actions of many of the stories and the people that we talk about, but not everything is black and white, I guess.
Absolutely. Well, you mentioned POWs in Korea. That's another recommendation for this season. Taiwan's shadowy involvement in the Korean War. Fascinating.
Yes, it was. And it's shown by the fact that it's a two-parter. We needed 2 episodes just to cover that story.
And another one that required 2 episodes was the story of Dr. Peng Mingmin, the pro-independence, pro-democracy leader.
Yeah, I really liked that one. And as I recall, we recorded it just like either days or like a week before he passed away. It was just very timely. Mm-hmm. And not only that, but I was personally really touched by getting an email from Elizabeth Thornberry. So she is the daughter of the missionaries who helped Dr. Peng escape from Taiwan Her parents have passed on, and she's, of course, married and grown up and all that. But she sent an email and said, you know, hey, I had a lot of fun listening to that, and I knew most of those stories, but the part where you're talking about how Kissinger and Mao were trying to figure out what the hell happened made me laugh. So just getting an email from the daughter of someone who was so closely involved in this story that we told and connected to Taiwan like that, I'll tell the truth. I sort of shed a little minor tear.
Just by chance, I happened to be having a very bad cold when I read that email comment as well. And yes, I needed a tissue.
And some of our other listener feedback includes topic suggestions for episodes, and we appreciate that a lot. One of our American listeners is a proud owner, or maybe I should say daddy, of a Taiwanese Tugo, a native Taiwanese dog, a rescue dog that he brought back to the States. And he suggested we do a story on this very intelligent, loyal breed of dog, and we are planning on doing that. Other recommendations include connections between Taiwan and Central America. And then there was one for Taiwanese aid work in Africa. And as soon as season 3 comes through, we are going to do our best to get to all of those stories.
There was a request from a listener in Singapore for an episode on the history of jai turkey rice. I've struggled to find enough information to make an episode. Well, an interesting episode. That one's still on my to-do list.
Maybe we could do that jai turkey rice thing with some other famous dishes.
Or drinks.
Leave it to you for drinks, yeah. And on a more serious subject, we will be covering 228. The uprising against nationalist misrule in 1947 that kicked off on that day, right, February 28th, the bloody crushing of the uprising that started on 228 and went through March. It's a huge story, which overshadows so much of modern history here in Taiwan. And John, maybe we should explain, why haven't we covered 228 before?
Well, it's such a big topic, and it's on a period of time which is especially interesting to me. Not just here in Taiwan, but worldwide. The immediate post-World War II years are generally neglected because they seem unimportant after the biggest story in the last, well, since forever, right? World War II. And I was thinking of writing a book about it, so I've held off doing 228 until I've done all the more detailed reading. But the best laid plans of men and writers, So later this year, we can cover the basics of 228.
And of course, 228 is still controversial. And no matter how we present this information, it's possible that we will upset some people.
Well, I don't use social media, so no worries.
Yeah, thanks a lot for that, friend. I do all the Facebook answering and the Instagram. We're now on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn. Oh, my goodness, everywhere.
Thanks, Eric. But you know what? Our listeners have been really good. It's been one of the great surprises about doing Formosa Files. Yeah, very civil and appreciative audience out there.
Yes, absolutely. And some other upcoming episode topics include the building of the Central Cross Island Highway.
Mm-hmm. Another on Taiwan's most important export, if we look at exports over the last few hundred years, sugar.
Right, sugar. And we should definitely look at the history behind Taiwan's current star export product, which would be the computer chip. So we need to look at TSMC, right? Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company. And probably the history of the whole computer industry, especially the Hsinchu Science Park.
And we can do an episode on photography in Taiwan. I was kindly given some books from the National Museum of Fine Arts. These books are related to a photography exhibition, and I'll be using them as a basis for an episode. But yeah, quite challenging, right? A visual medium as podcast material.
I was just going to say, you're going to have to describe the photographs really well. But speaking of museums, we also need to do an episode on the National Palace Museum, that decades-long journey of artifacts fleeing the Japanese and then the communists. It is an amazing story.
So many great stories out there, an almost bottomless well from which to drink from.
And we also have a lot of people, great people, that we've lined up to talk to as well. We have some interviews in the pipeline. Some are being edited. They'll come soon. One includes David Fell. He's a rather important academic in Taiwan studies in the UK at a place called SOAS. I don't know if it's pronounced SOAS.
SOAS.
Okay.
SOAS, yeah.
And we've also got Chen Liping. She's a postdoctoral scholar and teaching fellow in the East Asian Studies Center at the University of Southern California. She interviews experts on all things related to Taiwan, and her interviews can be quite lengthy and in-depth, but she also gets into history, and she's got some great info on defectors from China to Taiwan. She's got something on the final indigenous uprising against the Japanese. And for any ferroequinologists out there, we are also hoping... Yes, no, ferroequinologist. I might not be pronouncing it perfectly, but it comes from the Latin ferrum, iron, equa, a horse. So basically, it's people who love trains.
Aha, okay.
I was looking at the word up because I wanted to best you on that one, John. I was like, John won't know this word. I typed in, what word is there for people who love trains? And what came up was train fan. I'm like, no, I want something more exciting. So anyway, we've got a guy called Michael Riley. He wrote a book about the history of trains in Taiwan. Then there's Ian Inkster. He's got this wild article called Cannibalism and the Cultural Denigration of Imperial China, a story of Taiwan in the 1890s. I've got to know what that's about. That's wild. And we've also got Michael Hurst, the man who runs the Taiwan POW Society. He has some corrections and new details related to the POW episode we did way back in season one.
Mm-hmm. And I'll be talking to Ian Easton, the author behind The Chinese Invasion Threat, and more recently, The Final Struggle.
So the plan is we'll be running these interviews mostly between seasons 2 and 3, and also doing some shorter extras. And John, what ideas do we have for those?
Can't think off the top of my head. I've been concentrating on regular episodes, but I've been thinking about, not sure how to put this, the footnotes of history, or the forgotten footnotes of history.
Okay, the forgotten footnotes of history.
Side stories that get left out because they don't fit neatly into a narrative arc, or because they're too complicated. A perfect example of this would be the story of the siege of Fort Zeelandia. Can you summarize the ending of that for us?
Yeah, sure. Early 1662, after a long siege, 9 months, I think it was, Governor Coyot and the Dutch surrendered to the Ming loyalist Koxinga. Koxinga lets the Dutch sail away, drawing an end to Dutch rule on Taiwan, which started in 1624. And then Coyot gets blamed by the Dutch East India Company bosses, and Koxinga dies by the end of the year.
Yes, it's a neat ending to an epic story, right?
Yeah.
But the Dutch actually came back for a few more years up in Geelong, rebuilding a fortress they'd abandoned in 1661. So they come back 1664, I think. They're on a sort of an offshore islet, Geelong. A fortress a bit like Fort Zeelandia. It faces seaward and also landward, and it's covered by a defense, a redoubt inland.
Yeah, and some also forget that in 1666, Koxinga's son sent a large fleet and a force of some 3,000 men to take it.
But he failed.
Because this time they didn't have a traitor showing them how to best lay all the siege works, did they?
That's right. And then 2 years later, the Dutch, we don't want to stay here. They abandoned the fort and Taiwan forever. You see why it's best to end the story of the Dutch with the surrender of the castle in Tainan.
Yeah, the Geelong episode is very anticlimactic, and it didn't really lead to anything. It reminds me a bit of a big send-off, you know, you're moving overseas and saying goodbye to everyone, there's all the hugs and heartfelt wishes, waves, and then, oops, you forgot something, and then you have to come back and say your goodbyes again.
Exactly. It's like at a train station, a send-off, people waving goodbye as the train pulls out, and then it stops a few meters on.
Yeah. And as we keep saying, history is just not black and white. It's not simple. Everything is a lot more complex. Have you got any other good examples of this, like, streamlining of stories? What did you call them? Forgotten footnotes?
Forgotten footnotes. Yeah. Forgotten footnotes. Yes. Okay. Another example. All right. A minor one. Historical accounts will often say, Following the death of Chiang Kai-shek in 1975, his son Zhang Jingguo became president.
Right, although it would be more accurate to say slightly later, because we know that Yan Jiagan served out the remaining 3 years of Zhang's presidential term from 1975 to 1978.
Right. So his short presidency would be a good example of like a side story that you could explore on its own terms. Another example, we're talking about Chiang Kai-shek and presidential terms. Here's a case of accuracy not being the friend of storytelling. When he fled to Taiwan in late 1949, such a dramatic moment, right, after decades of struggle on the mainland, he wasn't the president. He'd resigned in January and would regain the position in March the following year.
Oh, yeah. Okay. But he's still the head honcho, so It's kind of fine to leave out that detail. And it gets really complicated going into all those power struggles that took place. And anyway, let's move from footnotes to the big screen. A question for you. If you could get one of our episodes made into a movie, and by the way, if anybody wants to fund that, do let us know. Which one would you pick?
I'm not a fan of sports movies, but it's very hard to go past the story of C.K. Young, the Iron Man of Asia, his duel for gold. Yeah, this was a competition between the world's top two decathletes, American Rafer Johnson and Taiwanese C.K. Young, at the Rome Olympics in 1960.
Definitely, that would make a great movie. You could end the story there in 1960, or you could continue to the Tokyo Olympics in 1964, where a whole bunch of cloak and dagger stuff went on.
Then there are the battles between Koxinga and the Dutch. They would make a good movie, but that movie's already being made. A trilogy, to be exact. The first one due out in 2024, 400 years after the arrival of the Dutch.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. And one of the encouraging things we've heard from listeners is that they've learned a lot about southern Taiwan, which is very satisfying, especially for me, and I'm sure for you too, John.
Mm-hmm.
Because southern Taiwan has been underserved by English language media for many decades. It doesn't matter if it's one of the local papers or whether it's one of the English language. It's this Taipei bubble, and it's something we're trying to correct. We've got no shortage of stories from southern Taiwan, and... all right, in the upcoming season, we'll even cover some stories from Taichung.
Eric, I'm sensing some rivalry here from the Kaohsiung boy. Your hometown pushed into third place with the rise of Taichung.
Yeah, I want a recount on that, definitely. But I mean, come on, for historical stories, Taichung is struggling to make even the top five cities. And no offense to our Taichung listeners, but you know, it's... I don't know.
Yeah, you're right. It's painful but true. There are some stories, like the Lin family of Wu Fong, one of the great families of Taiwan history. Yeah, and in the 1920s, Taichung was a center for Taiwanese cultural activities and growing Taiwanese identity, nationalism. What else? Bicycle manufacturing. It was an Air Force base, so we got some Vietnam War stories. Help me out.
There was a famous assassination attempt in the 1920s, and then there's Lugang in Jianghua County. That's full of history. So, okay, Taichung's not historyless. We'll find something.
We'll find something.
And as we sign off here, we just want to say a huge thank you to our sponsor, the Frank Chen Foundation. And we haven't really talked about the Frank Chen Foundation in the intro. It just says that he was the mayor of Kaohsiung from 1960 to 1968. But he is the son of Chen Zhonghe, the sugar magnate who built a huge section of Kaohsiung and was the richest person in southern Taiwan. And when we talk about famous Taiwanese families, we're going to get around to talking about the Chen family, definitely. But we very much appreciate the support of the Frank Chen Foundation. It's been very helpful. And we appreciate you. Thank you all for listening and for sending in emails and commenting on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and all of that. Big xiexie.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you for your fantastic support. I don't know if it's just Eric only passing on the good stuff to me or not, but I suspect it reflects the actual mail we get.
Yeah, very little hate mail. You've been listening to a brief conversation related to Formosa Files. I'm Eric Michael Smith.
I'm John Ross.